compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what kind of a conversation you might hear, and it could be yours if you call 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, 888, they say a third time's a charm, 888-914-9149. If you have any travel plans, as you've heard me talking about here and there over the last several weeks, the airlines are in disarray, lots of cancellations, flights being delayed. That's happened to me a million and one times over the years. A flight gets delayed, I don't make my connecting flight. And that can be a real nightmare. Cyrus, has that ever happened to you? Have you ever had to spend the night in an airport or something like that? Like I have, because you missed a connecting flight because they were delayed?
Yeah, how much time do we have?
Not that much time.
I was on a flight to Chicago from California on Christmas Eve. And everything got delayed, and I ended up getting into Chicago really late, and I was stranded there. Mm-hmm. So the place was empty on Christmas Eve. It was an absolute nightmare. Another time, in Chicago again, our connecting flight was a little late, so we ran. My wife and I ran across O'Hare. I think it's like 17 miles or something.
Yeah.
And as we got
maybe
up to,
more.
As we got up to the gate, our flight was still there, and we're like, oh, we made it, we made it. And we gave them our tickets, and they're like, oh, we gave these tickets to people that were on standby. I'm like, but we're here.
Yeah.
And it's like, sorry. And but
had the door closed?
The door's open. The door's open. Oh. And the guy turned around and he shut the doors. He said, sorry, the doors are shut.
Wow.
Once the doors are shut, there's nothing I can do. And we were stranded there overnight.
Was he smiling when he said that?
On the inside, I think he was. Yeah.
That's a terrible story, and I can relate to it. I had one where I got up to the gate because I was, you know, trying to get from one terminal to another, and I got right up to the gate, and as I'm walking up, they walk over and they start closing the door, and I said, no, I'm here, and they turned around and looked at me and just kept closing the door.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the same thing. Sorry, if the door's closed, you can't get on. So I sat there for like the next 20 minutes as they got the flight ready to go, and then it left without me. Well, the reason I ask is because everybody's in the same boat nowadays, and if you're doing any traveling of any kind, it's worth your time to listen to what the pros have to say on the topic, including like flight attendants. And there's one article in the New York Times by Christy Kerbel. She's got some tips on what you should and shouldn't do if you're going to be flying, and especially this summer, because, you know, summer it brings weather, and that in itself can be a problem. So just a few quick points, and it's there on the show Twitter feed, at @PMadridShow, and you can access it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. But just a few high points. She says, always fly direct. That way, if you're delayed, you don't have to worry about making a connecting flight. That makes sense. Less stress, less worry, and if you're delayed, that's okay, because you're still going to get there anyway. She says, fly as early in the day as possible. She says, the first flights of the day are rarely canceled. Thunderstorms build as the day gets warmer. Flight crews reach their duty limits later in the day. Traffic builds at busy airports. That might mean a 3 a.m. alarm to get up early to go, but if your early flight does happen to cancel, there will be more options for you later in the day. This is a rule that I live by, Cyrus. I usually try to get the absolute earliest flight for these reasons. I learned this lesson the hard way a long time ago. Download the app for the airline that you're flying, because they'll be able to keep you updated a lot faster, it seems, than what's going on in the airport itself when it comes to changes of gates or delays, that kind of thing. Pack smart. I know that sounds like it, you know, kind of self-evident, but if you can get everything you need into a smaller bag that you could take with you on the plane, obviously a lot less likely that your baggage is going to be lost. And that's happened too, and it's no fun. Be patient. A few other things. Bring a sweater if you're in the cabin and it tends to get cold. That'll help you. Just little details like that. And it's more of a public service announcement than anything else.
Leave your shoes on.
Please.
Please.
Leave your shoes on. with an underscore. That should be in bold.
And let the guy sleep. If the guy next to you is sleeping, let him sleep. Don't talk to him. If he has headphones in, don't talk to him.
That's a good point. I have another one I'd like to add, and this is, for some reason, I do not know why this is going on lately. Leave the window shade up, because there are people who want to look out the window. Now, if you're sitting by the window, I think it's sort of like an immutable law of the universe. If you have the window seat, you control the window shade. but the guy on the aisle seat might want to look out the window. Some people even have anxiety if they can't see out the window. No. Yeah, I'll tell you another secret that I have, Cyrus. You ready? I always book the window seat. Always.
That way you can keep it down.
No. Up. Doesn't belong to you.
Oh, you're that guy.
I'm that guy. Should be up. Should be up. I've noticed there's a weird trend in air travel lately, at least in the last, seems like it's really become a thing in the last 5 years, where sometimes like every shade is down.
Oh,
and it's like the people
it's glorious.
Have, no. Remind me never to fly with you, because I want that shade up. I want to see out there.
I'll be that guy right behind you, bringing your shade down, and then you'll be pushing the shade up, and I'll bring it down. Have you seen
God's
those videos?
Beautiful. I have. Yeah, I have. That's why I like sitting in that seat, so I can lift it up. And I know that we're probably evenly divided, but anyway. Have an email that came in. This is from Virginia. She's listening to us in California. She says, hello to everyone at Relevant Radio. Thank you so much. I learned more with you in 3 years than I did learning catechesis my whole life. And she says, and I'm almost 50. Here in California, I got a medical letter about my daughter who is 13 saying that she can get medical services after 12 without an adult or parental consent. She doesn't need my permission. Also, my daughter needs psychological help because she thinks she's trans. I found a Catholic psychologist, and I hope he can help my daughter. Is there something you recommend? I need your prayers, please. Thank you for making my day more faithful and beautiful. I love you all. Well, gosh, thank you, Patricia. Or I'm sorry, Virginia. And this is the funny part of Virginia's letter. It's not that your letter was funny, Virginia, but when you put in the subject line that it was for Patricia Madrid, that's what caught my eye immediately. Because I knew it was for me, but my name's not Patricia, Patrick. Difference. But so what I would recommend is get a hold of a couple of books that I've recommended on the program any number of times. One is called When Harry Became Sally, and that's by Dr. Ryan Anderson, not a medical doctor. He's a PhD. But it's a very good overview, very calm and non-polemical overview of this phenomenon. Of why is it that all of a sudden in the last seemingly only a matter of 4 or 5 years now have we seen this really big spike in girls especially notifying their parents, 12, 13, 14 years old, I think I'm a boy. Why is that? Why did that not happen before? And why is it happening all of a sudden? So this book is a sociological explanation of the phenomenon. And he also gives some good advice for you as a mom. A second book is called Irreversible Damage, and that's by Abigail Schreier. Now, what's interesting is Abigail Schreier is Jewish, and for all I know, she's a secular Jew. I don't know if she's religious or not. I could probably find that out. I just don't know. So she's not coming at this from like the perspective of a Catholic or somebody who is quoting Jesus or anything like that. But she, too, sheds a lot of important light, especially clinically, on this phenomenon. Ryan Anderson happens to be Catholic. So between those two books, I think you'll find a lot there to help you with your daughter. And I do think you're right to get her some counseling so she can work through this. Another resource that I would recommend, Virginia, is a website called sexchangeregret.com. Now, that is a website that's run by a man who lived as a woman, putatively, for many years. And he decided that he had made a big mistake and he tried to detransition back into being a man. You see, you really can't, of course, become a woman if you're a man. You can try to look like a woman. You can try to speak like a woman. You can try to dress like a woman. All those things are just externals. It's interesting how they play into all the stereotypes in any case. But you can't really become a woman, nor can a woman really become a man. And that's his point. He said, I tried it. I did all that. I was super into all that. In fact, he did the surgeries. I don't even want to think about that, but that's part of his story. And he says, of course, those things are irreversible. But the main thing is, he has a message for people that your daughter should listen to, and that is, been there, done that, and it doesn't work, and it's not good, and it's not good for you. And this is the thing that's so shocking, is that the number of both male and females who go down that road, the number of people some years down the road, maybe 5 years, 10 years at the very latest, the incidence or the percentage of those people who are deeply sorry that they did this. They really regret having done it. They wish they had never done this in the first place, but in some cases they can't undo what they've done. He says that number is very high, and it leads to other problems like suicide, for example. And in short of suicide, it leads to people who have very difficult and painful emotional lives. They don't fit in. They don't know where they are in terms of, you know, society as a whole. And a lot of it is because of regret, because they were, in some cases, coerced into this ideology simply because they expressed some ambivalence about their own identity. So share that with her as well. Sexchangeregret.com. I think you'll find all these resources helpful. Thank you for the email, Virginia. Let's go to E. Frank in Astoria, New York. Good morning, E. Frank. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Patrick. I have a question that has been on my mind for several years now. And I had never received an answer from anyone in my parish or in my diocese in regards to the changes of liturgical years. Now, in my community, my Catholic community here in the Diocese of Brooklyn, we celebrated different years, like the year of the priest, the year of St. Joseph, the year of Divine Mercy. But, you know, I would always ask my former pastor, who never wanted to assume the responsibility of being the pastor of the parish itself. He decided to create a separate independent office and cater to the or assist the parishioners with the needs of the parish itself by just upholding a separate independent office apart from the diocese and the parish. And I would always ask him, Monsignor, is it true that, you know, that there is under Canaan law and Canaan code that changing the year, the liturgical year, not the year of the celebration, the liturgical celebratorial year, but the liturgy itself, from liturgy A, B, C, D, does it affect the needs, spiritual needs of the parish and the community? And he would tell me it's not too difficult to change, and it doesn't affect anything. So there is no big deal from changing from one form of liturgy to another form of liturgy.
But you know what, E. Frank, I've got to stop you. I've got to stop you there because I'm really unclear what you're trying to tell me. Are you saying that at a parish near you, they don't follow the church's calendar or that they don't stay, like right now we're in ordinary time? I'm not entirely sure what you're driving at. Could you clarify that a bit?
Sure. For example, the calendar that they refuse to use, the diocesan calendar, which constitutes when the vestments are placed, either they either have a solemnity or a regular ordinary day. They decide to use a calendar that corresponds to the historical perspective of the parish itself. They don't want to abide by diocesan rules and regulations.
Okay. This is really not a question for me because there's nothing I could do about it. There's nothing I can even say about it because I don't know exactly what's going on. If you wanted to kind of bump it up the ladder, if you've talked to the parish priest and you're not getting anywhere, you could send a query to the diocese. That would be my suggestion because that's where they're competent to deal with a question like this. Now, are you saying in a roundabout sort of way that the parish is following the traditional calendar, which is different from the modern calendar that the church uses? I'm talking about the calendar of feasts since Vatican II. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, that's what they're doing.
Okay, so all you have to do is, well, I don't know that you have to do anything personally, but if it's an issue, then I would say if the pastor should be following the calendar, unless he has an indult from the bishop, or if it's a parish where the traditional Latin Mass is permitted, in which case they're allowed to follow that calendar, I don't think there's an issue there. But if that's not the case and you think it's necessary to try to change that, then I would say if the priest isn't willing to talk with you about it, then maybe send a respectful letter to the bishop. But that's about all I can say on that issue, E. Frank. I appreciate your phone call. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Now, I talked a few minutes ago about the email from the mom whose daughter thinks that she's trans and, you know, what should she do? And I have an article here that I want to share with you that has to do with a teenager in California who is backing Florida's ban on Medicaid funds for transgender medical interventions. And I want to share the story with you. It's an article by Tyler O'Neill. We'll get it linked on the show Twitter feed so you can read it for yourself. It's interesting because she's coming out of that world. Here's what it says. A California teen who once identified as transgender and took hormones and underwent surgery to affirm such an identity spoke out in favor of a Florida rule blocking Medicaid funds for paying for medical interventions for gender dysphoria. So I'm going to read it to you as it's written, okay? We have a little bit of audio. We'll probably get to that after the break. Chloe Cole, 17, said at a public hearing on Friday, "I really didn't understand all the ramifications of any of the medical decisions that I was making." She said, and again, I'm going to use the pronouns as they are in the article, keeping in mind that she, well, you'll understand as I go. Chloe Cole, 17, she said she was medically transitioned from ages 13 to 16 by taking so-called puberty-blocking drugs and testosterone and undergoing surgery to, and I'll just put it this way, a mastectomy, double mastectomy, when she was 15. She said, "I was unknowingly physically cutting off my true self from my body irreversibly and painfully. I don't know if I'll ever be able to fully carry a child, and I might be at increased risk for certain kinds of cancers, mainly cervical cancer." She said this in a separate meeting with Florida Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo. And there's some audio that we're going to get to saying, "Because I do not have my breasts, I'm not able to breastfeed any future children I might have." Cyrus, do you want to save the audio or should we play it now?
I think we should play it. What a sad story. This was terribly a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah. Yeah, she's 17 now, but this was done over the course of 13 to 16 years of age. Horrifying.
All right, this is what she had to say.
Okay.
"I don't know if I'll be able to fully carry a child, and I might be at increased risk for certain cancers, namely cervical cancer. And because I do not have my breasts, I no longer have breasts. I'm not able to breastfeed whatever future children I have." That realization actually was one of the biggest things that led to me realizing that this was not the path that I should have taken.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this
is
a cautionary tale.
God bless her for coming out and
oh yeah,
sharing this horrific story. I mean, you could say she did it to herself. She's 13. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's a child.
I'm sure she was herded by adults who themselves wanted to score brownie points by being oh so progressive and oh so with it. And look at us. Aren't we great? Because we're like super into the whole transgender thing. And look at our daughter or whoever it was behind this. I don't know all the specifics. Let me share a little bit more before we go. You know what? Let's not do that. Let's take a break and we'll come back. I'll share a little bit more of this story. And especially for you moms and dads, if you're bumping into this and you're seeing maybe with your son or your daughter this sort of movement in the direction of thinking that they are trans, share this kind of information with them so that they recognize that there are other young people just like them who are going down that road. And some of them, thankfully, are turning around and trying to come back because they realize that road does not go anywhere happy. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Talking a little bit about a young woman named Chloe Cole. She's 17, and from the ages of 13 to 16, she was transitioned, or so she thought, into being male, including having a double mastectomy, testosterone treatments, puberty blockers, the whole nine yards. She did all that. She's regretting it now. You heard a little bit of audio from her. I want to share with you a bit more on this story, especially as I was saying, because I know that you your daughter, your 13-year-old daughter, is saying, hey, I think I might be trans, or hey, I know somebody who thinks she might be trans. What do I do? So share this information. She says, no child should have to experience what I have. When asked what she would say to the public, Cole said, do not transition your kids. I was waiting for Cyrus to say full stop, but he didn't say it, so I'll move on. She says, do not transition your kids.
Full stop.
All right. I wanted the better version.
This
but
is so serious, okay. though. This is a serious, I don't like playing silly sounds.
No, I understand. I you know what? I agree with that. But that's the point that she's making. There's no preamble. There's no explanation. It's just the message. Do not transition your kids.
Full stop.
If you are considering, she says, if you're considering transitioning, please wait until you are a fully developed adult. Transition can damage your body and mind in ways that you may not fully understand. Latipo, this is the physician that was mentioned a little bit earlier. He's the Surgeon General of Florida. He warns against transgender medical interventions for children, saying medicalization of minors with gender dysphoria might advance political views of physicians involved in their care. But the data shows, but the data showing any benefits for the actual children is extraordinarily thin. The Surgeon General said the affirmation model runs an unacceptably high risk of harm. Parents are threatened with fears of suicide, but the treatments have not been shown to actually reduce this risk. These patients need compassionate care of their emotional and mental well-being, not to be embroiled in political news about sex and gender. I want to pause there for a second. This is a recurring theme that I'm hearing more and more from parents who share on this issue, saying, well, shouldn't we allow her to try to transition because she's saying if she can't do it, she's going to commit suicide? And that's a wild card in this equation, if you ask me, where you've got a child saying, well, if I can't do this, I'm going to be so miserable, I might commit suicide. That, of course, is a really, that's a significant problem for parents, because then they may be put in the position of saying, well, let's go ahead and support this because we don't want our child dead. And that's an understandable but incorrect reaction, as the Surgeon General says. I'd like to repeat what he just says. He says, the affirmation model runs unacceptably high. Parents are threatened with fears of suicide, but the treatments have not been shown to actually reduce this risk. These patients need compassionate care. So in other words, the data, as far as it goes anyway, and this is the data that he's alluding to, the data does not bear out the claim or the idea that so many of these young people are committing suicide if they are not permitted to transition. That's the point that he's making here. Chloe Cole herself spoke in favor of Rule 59G-1.050, in which the Agency for Healthcare Administration would restrict Medicaid funding from transgender drugs and procedures. Under that rule, Florida Medicaid would not cover puberty blockers, hormones, and hormone antagonists, or sex reassignment surgeries, or any other procedures that alter primary or secondary sexual characteristics in order to treat gender dysphoria. AHCA Communications Director Brock Juarez praised Cole's testimony as very thought-provoking, also noting that AHCA's recent report finding that several services for treating gender dysphoria, and these are his words, are not consistent with widely accepted professional medical standards and are experimental and investigational, with the potential for harmful long-term effects. Transgender activist groups, medical associations, and the American Academy of Pediatrics have supported medical interventions for minors diagnosed with gender dysphoria, condemning policies like the one that Chloe Cole, as I say, formerly a transgender boy, but not really, but you get the idea. This is what she's supporting. She's supporting this measure because she's been there, she's done that, and she supports it. But you've got this whole army of people, physicians, activist groups, the AAP, etc., who are on the other side telling her, hey, you don't know what you're talking about. This is a great thing. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that youth who identify as transgender have access to comprehensive gender-affirming and developmentally appropriate health care that is provided in a safe and inclusive clinical space, wrote the American Academy of Pediatrics. That's just happy talk, if you ask me. Gender affirming, developmentally appropriate, safe and inclusive. These are all just buzzwords, happy talk. In May 2021, the Biden administration and the Department of Health and Human Services announced that the Office for Civil Rights will interpret and enforce Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act and Title IX's prohibition on the discrimination based on sex to include discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And this, by the way, is something I've shared with you over the last few years about how the language in Title IX, not to mention all the other civil rights language that's been used about how you cannot discriminate against somebody because of their race, their ethnicity, their religion, and their sex. And sex was always always was understood to mean male or female, meaning that if you're a good old boys kind of company and you don't want any women, you can't discriminate against women just because you don't like women. That would be illegal. But what they've done now is to revise the definition of sex to mean whatever flavor you've decided you want to be that day, your gender identity. So it's just an ongoing problem that's picking up speed. It's affecting more and more people. We're hearing about it on this program. If you listen long enough, you'll hear parents calling in. I get emails about this on a regular basis. So we're trying to do everything we can to give you the resources that you need, but also to give you the encouragement that you need so that you'll be in a position to help your children. Obviously, that's what you want to do, but how do you do it? Sometimes it's not easy to know exactly how to do it. That's what we're trying to do here. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Buffalo now and talk to Laura. Good morning, Laura. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I also am dealing with this issue of transgenderism. I have a 21-year-old son who's autistic, and he currently also believes that he's a male or a female. Currently seeing a gender psychologist who's very conservative. Okay. But I recently found a Discord group called GenSpect, and it's a group of people who have a child or somebody they know dealing with transgenderism. And it's a platform that brings these people together to kind of, bring mutual support to each other. Mm-hmm. There's also people who have transitioned and who are now detransitioning, trying to help each other too. Okay. So I've also been talking to, a person from the UK who's, detransitioning and trying to bring this to light that this is a bad path for young people to go down. Yes. I found the group to be very helpful and just wanted to, bring that out to you.
Yeah. How would people access that? How would they
you
locate
can just
it?
Go like just so just Google GenSpect. It's called it's GenSpect. Okay. And it's a Discord group. So once
now,
you
Discord
Google
is
that,
a
you'll,
is Discord like Telegram? Is it where you can send messages like in a group? Is that what Discord? I'm not on it. I don't really know what it is, but I've heard of it before.
Yeah, it's an app that you can put on your phone to access it. And then it's just a platform. It's kind of like a communication platform. Mm-hmm. It's not like an online website, but it's a communication platform that you can access through an app on your phone.
So you can join chat groups, so you can join people who have a common interest and then talk amongst yourselves using the app?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And you can just do text, you can do video chat. But I've been talking to this male in the UK who's 35 years old, and he's going through the same thing.
Okay. Okay. So you're finding some help in this. Now, has any of that benefited your son in any direct way? Like the things you're learning in this group, have you been able to apply it
Not
in a way
yet.
That's helpful?
So this person I'm speaking to said he would be willing to talk to my son regarding this if he's willing to talk to him. So my son right now is very radicalized. So if I bring any kind of argument against transgenderism, he will pretty much shut down. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of walking a fine line right now in what I can tell my son because I don't want him to shut down completely. So
when you say shut down, does he just stop talking to you or what form does that take?
He's currently living with me, but he is 21 years old, so he is legally an adult. So
is he able to live on his own?
He could, but he doesn't have the skills right now to do that. So that's a benefit to me right now because it makes him, you know, it's keeping it at home basically. But he's also talking to someone online who I believe is not a good person to be talking to.
Right.
So I have that issue going on as well. And I also have an issue with my family who are in the medical, like they're in the medical profession,
mm-hmm.
who are supporting my son in this. They're encouraging him and telling me that they will help him in any way they can to move forward with this transitioning process.
It's
so
dastardly.
It is. It's horrible. So, like,
have you told them to back off?
I have. I've sent an email to like my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, like my entire family, and they basically sent me an email back and said, "We will help my son. They will help him in any way they can to help him transition. They think this is a good thing." And I think I'm just like appalled by it. Like, they're encouraging him to go on hormones, to do the surgery, because he's also autistic. So he has Asperger's, which is an autistic disorder. And they feel that since he's decided that he's transgender, he's very happy. And whenever they see him, he's happy. So they feel that this must be a good thing for him, because this is the happiest they've ever seen him. And and I said, you know, happiness doesn't always equal healthy, you know, because I've explained to my mother-in-law that if you look at someone just before they commit suicide, they're euphoric. So to judge this based on, you know, how happy he appears, it doesn't mean that this is a healthy thing to do.
Not at all.
So it's a very tough thing for me, because, like, I don't even want to be around my family. I don't want him to be around my family because it's almost like cultic. You know what I mean? Like, it's a cult. Like, it's
and the fact that they are completely disrespecting your prerogative as his mother, you have a right. Even though, as you say, he's 21 years old, and from a legal standpoint, he certainly has the wherewithal, the autonomy to make decisions, even terrible decisions. But how offensive and repugnant that they nonetheless are ignoring and even, you know, flouting your role as his mother. And I mean, that's reprehensible that they should do that.
And, you know, one thing I can say to people who are listening, do not go to a gender clinic. My sister-in-law, who's a physician's assistant, referred my son to a gender clinic in Buffalo. And I told him I would not take him there because I don't agree with it. My niece, who is same-sex attracted, decided that she'd step in and take him herself. So that's what she did. And I
the blind leading the blind.
And I found a gender psychologist who's very conservative, who will not refer his patients to an endocrinologist unless he's, you know, confident himself that this is the right thing, which, in my opinion, it never is. So I got him away from this gender clinic, and he's now seeing this this psychologist who specializes in gender dysphoria. And where we're at right now is my son is waiting for a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, which is, to me, a
false
diagnosis.
Gonna get.
It's not real.
Which
right,
he'll get.
He'll get
if
it.
If you put your quarter into the machine and turn the handle, you're going to get your diagnosis. It's just like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. But this psychologist that he's dealing with, I think, is going to tell my son that he has to dress and live as a woman for a year before he will send him to an endocrinologist, which is...
And Laura, I...
...some time, because he's not going to do anything permanent.
Let's pray that he doesn't go down that road. Well, I'd like to... first of all, thank you. I've got to take a break in a minute. I have complete confidence that the position that you're taking, as difficult as it is the right one. So I want to encourage you to stand your ground. Take a listen, and thank you for the phone call, Laura. Maybe call me in a few months and let me know how things develop. I'd be very interested, and we'll certainly pray for you and for your son. Take a listen now to a Black Protestant minister preaching on this topic recently, and we played this maybe, I don't know, 5-6 months ago. It's worth playing again now in light of what Laura in Buffalo had to say about the situation. It's straight talk. You're not going to hear that very often, but you'll hear it here. Here's what he had to say.
There's something else I'm not supposed to say. ain't but two genders. Two genders. Ain't nothing but men and women. And I can already see WRL out there. They got their licking their pencils right now, trying to write fierce as they can. Get every word of this here. Get every word of this. You can go to the doctor and get cut up. You can go down to the dress shop and get made up. You can go down there and get drugged up. But at the end of the day, you were just a drugged up, dressed up, made up, cut up man or woman. You ain't changed what God put in you, that DNA. You can't transcend God's creation. I don't care how hard you try. The transgender movement in this country, if there's a movement in this country that is demonic and that is full of the spirit of Antichrist, it is the transgender movement. It's time for grown-ups and time for Christians to start standing up and being unafraid to tell the truth. Come after me if you want to. I don't care. You want my head? Here it is right here. Come on, come get it. I don't care because it's time for us to stand up. Now, I'm not afraid to stand up and tell the truth about that issue. They're dragging our kids down into the pit of hell trying to teach them that mess in our schools. Tell you like this, that ain't got no place at no school. 2 + 2 don't equal transgender. It equals 4. We need to get back to teaching them how to read instead of teaching them how to go to hell.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.
I don't think I can add anything to that. That's about as good as it gets. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. The number is 888-914-9149. And by the way, that's Mark Robinson. Mark, Cyrus, you say he's the lieutenant governor?
That is, let me double check, that he is the lieutenant governor of North Carolina.
He's not the president of the United States?
We could be so lucky.
We could be so lucky. I'll be right back. Got a little woman, be a woman. Let a man be a man. Listen. Got a little woman, be a woman. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Talk about a land of confusion, I'll say. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Front Royal, Virginia now and talk to a little girl named Felicity. Good morning, Felicity.
Hello, my name is Felicity, and I am from Front Royal, and this is my question. Do we have to do the sign of the cross with our right hand?
No, you can make the sign of the cross with your right hand or your left hand. God is happy when you do it either way. And I think it's because most people are right-handed that you're used to seeing people make the sign of the cross with their right hand. There's also a custom in the church from a long time ago to make the sign of the cross with the right hand, but it's just a custom. You don't have to do it. You can do it with your left hand or your right hand.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering because my sister Maribel, she's a lefty, and she mostly at meals, I see her do the sign of the cross with her left hand.
Yeah, she's not doing anything wrong. So if she does it that way, that's okay. It's more of a custom. Do you know what the word custom means? Sounds like your little brother wants to talk on the phone too. All right. Well, I'll tell you
this
much.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Felicity. Thank you for the phone call. Yeah, it's a custom, and it's a liturgical custom that goes back a long time. So one thing is, and I've already said goodbye to Felicity. What a sweet little thing. But you'll notice some differences in how the sign of the cross is made between the Orthodox churches and the Catholic Church. So that's something that is different in that way. But it's all the same thing. We're making the same sign when we do the sign of the cross in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. We're invoking the Blessed Trinity, one God in three persons. We're also invoking the triumph of the cross. And when we make the sign of the cross, we're thinking about what Jesus accomplished for us by his saving death on the cross. So those are the things that are happening when we make the sign of the cross in faith. And interestingly, for those who are interested, this was a source of polemics during the time of the Protestant Reformation, because there were some, such as John Calvin, who originally was Catholic, by the way, before he became Protestant, but he argued against the Catholic custom of making the sign of the cross, saying that it was superstitious and it was wrong and it was contrary to the gospel. And so none other than St. Francis de Sales, who was not alive during the time that John Calvin was ruling in Geneva, but he was a priest who went to the environs of Geneva about 60 years after the Catholic faith had been driven out, and there was a new king, and he was Catholic, and so he changed the law to allow the Catholic faith again in that area. And so it was no longer illegal to be a Catholic in that area as it had been under the time of Calvin. And so when St. Francis de Sales went there to the Chablais region, this would be eastern France and now the area around Lake Geneva in Switzerland, and he went there as a young priest, about 27 years of age, to evangelize these people who had been hardened in their anti-Catholicism because of their Calvinism. And one of the things he ran into was this deep-seated antipathy toward making the sign of the cross, because that's what the people had been told, that this is wrong, you shouldn't do this, this is pagan, this is superstitious. So St. Francis de Sales wrote a little book called The Sign of the Cross, and it's still in print to this day. It's published by Sophia Institute Press, if you're at all interested. It won't take you very long to read it. You could probably read the whole thing in about an hour. But in this book, what St. Francis de Sales does is he gives 15 reasons why making the sign of the cross is a good Christian thing to do, eminently biblical, and it's not superstitious. And he goes through and refutes all of Calvin's attempts at proving the opposite. So if it interests you, maybe that might be a thing for you parents in teaching your children how to pray. Get a copy of that book. It's available at Sophia Institute Press. Of course, patronize your local Catholic bookstore. That's the best thing to do. If you don't have one of those handy, you can always get it online. Let's go to Colleen now, listening in Milwaukee. Good morning, Colleen.
Hi, Patrick. My question has to do with natural family planning and contraceptives in marriage. And I was wondering, I'm kind of coming at it from, is natural family planning kind of acting in the same way as contraceptives, where humans sort of try to take into their own hands when they're going to procreate?
No, it is definitely not contraceptive. And those who try to make the case that it is are badly misguided, sadly mistaken. And the reason it's not contraception is the following. First of all, contraception, and it takes various forms. It could be barriers, could be chemicals, could be certain actions that might be taken to prevent conception. But all of those have the intended effect of enjoying the marital act and enjoying the pleasure of the marital act without the responsibility of the marital act, the possibility of children. Mm-hmm. So that's the nature of contraception. Okay. Well, there's more to it, Colleen. Would you like me to share?
I wanted to add really quick too, and maybe have you comment on this. The way I answered it when somebody asked me was, there is a part about natural family planning that requires a human to fast. And I think that that's character building and something that God would want us to truly engage in and therefore deepen the relationship we do have when the responsibility is acknowledged. Do you think that that's an appropriate answer, or am I mistaken?
No, you're not mistaken. That was part of what I was headed to, but the okay. analogy of fasting is a good one. So would you like me to explain
Please.
That? Okay. So it's a very important question you're asking. So let's get back to the question of what is the nature of contraception as such, whether it's a chemical or a barrier, et cetera. It's to use and enjoy the pleasure of the marital act without the responsibility that would arise in the form of the possibility of conception. So it's selfish and disordered because it thwarts the very purpose of the act itself. It's also a lie because the husband and the wife are with their bodies saying, I give myself entirely to you and I receive you entirely. And yet they're actually not doing that because contraception is subverting or thwarting that possibility. So to get to the question of this analogy of fasting, it's a very helpful analogy because it's similar to how the marital act is necessary for the human race to continue. Eating is necessary for the human race to continue. Individually, you need to continue. Otherwise, if nobody ate, we would all be gone. So eating is essential to human flourishing. Eating is also very pleasurable, and it's not only healthy and healthful for us, but it also brings us a great deal of pleasure. We think about all the time and energy that we spend upon selecting food and preparing it and the presentation and, you know, maybe some wine with your food or what have you. So it's a very, very integral part of our humanity. But there are times where either for bodily health or for maybe fasting for penance or some other reason, you mentioned character building, that can be one of those reasons. It's good at times to fast from food. Now, the analogy extends into the area of gluttony. So if, for example, somebody were to do effectively the same thing as what contraception does by enjoying the pleasure of eating the food, but divorcing oneself from the responsibilities that accrue, like calories and weight gain and, you know, cholesterol and all sorts of other problems that can arise if you eat the wrong food or you eat too much of food, it's the same as if you were to eat all that good food and then go into the vomitorium and vomit it all back up again and then belly back up to the table and eat some more and then go vomit it up. I mean, we clearly see this is deeply disordered because it's misusing a good thing. So in the case of natural family planning, it's not using the good thing at all. Like fasting, you're not misusing a good thing. You're just simply refraining from using it. And the pseudo argument that it's contraceptive because somehow you're interfering with God's plan for your life. You're interfering with God's plan for family. That's not true. You have a role to play in God's plan for your marriage and God's plan for your family. There are all kinds of things that you have to make decisions on. This is one of them. And you make decisions on the basis of prudence and looking for what is best for your family in the truest sense, not convenience. And so if a couple determines that because of ill health or maybe bankruptcy or war or some other type of natural disaster or problem that at the moment having a child would really be difficult for us, you're not being contraceptive by saying we will refrain from using the pleasure of the marital act as a way to space out a conception. And maybe down the road, we'll be in a better position to have a baby. God has given the mother and the father the right to make those decisions, just like what they spend their money on and what kind of house they live in and what kind of clothes they might wear. God does not tell us, you must do it this way and only this way. This is where human freedom and responsibility come into play. So for that reason, and there's much more that one could say, but I'll leave it at that, Colleen, but those are the main reasons why those who say that contraception is the same as NFP or vice versa, why they're just simply wrong. They don't understand it or they're not willing to accept what the church teaches. I don't know, but they're wrong. Okay, well, I hope that was helpful to you, Colleen. I appreciate the phone call. 888-914-9149. Now, for those who are interested, there are some resources out there. If you want to know more about natural family planning, get in touch with organizations like One More Soul. Their website is onemoresoul.com. I believe they're headquartered in Dayton, Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. There are other natural family planning resources available at your parish. So there typically are going to be natural family planning instructors at the parish level to assist married couple, or I'm sorry, those who are pursuing marriage in their marriage prep. Your diocese, chances are, will have a family life center, and that department can also give you referrals. So if you're interested in knowing more about that, but it is a, excuse me, it's a natural and virtuous way of regulating birth if you have a reason to do so. I certainly don't recommend it if you don't have a reason to do so. Rather, let God's plan unfold in your life if there's no issue like health or war or something like that. Well, I'll leave it at that, but we'll come back to more of your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.